Assalamu alaikum and a very good evening. Welcome to On the Couch with me, Farida, Rabia, and Soki and Zunzi. This is where you hear the difference on 100.4 FM. In South Africa, cervical cancer is the second most common cancer amongst women. Earlier this year, Stats SA revealed that 50.5%. Specialist surgeon Dr. Fatima Hussein of the Applestate Hussein and Associates says such statistics call for a more rigorous effort into increasing awareness of cervical cancer and to encourage women to go for regular screening. Dr. Fatima Hussein joins us this evening to further unpack this topic. Assalamu alaikum, Dr. Fatima, and welcome to On the Couch.
Wa alaikum salam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. So nice to be here to you and your listeners. Thank you for having me.
It's lovely to chat again. It's always nice to have one of those doctors that we, you know, can just reach out when we are having one of these serious topics. And for some time now, speaking to doctors, I realized that there are some things that just don't help women at all. There are some diseases that is more common in women that you find than men. So cervical cancer being, you know, the second most common cancer amongst women, how important is it for us to understand what cervical cancer is?
I think it's extremely important because we don't actually hear a lot about cervical cancer. In fact, since in our practice, since we've started introducing they've had one. And we've asked, okay, when have you had one? Oh, they've had one like years ago. Mm-hmm. And that's the thing. I mean, a lot of patients think that if maybe you don't even need it, you are after menopause, so you definitely don't have it. You don't have that much sex, so that's not an issue anymore. Don't worry about my cervix. Mm-hmm. There are a lot of misconceptions about cervical cancer and the importance of cervical cancer screening. Unfortunately, it is one of those diseases, like many others, where the risk increases as the patients get older. Mm. And therefore, it is recommended until patients are around 65 to even 70. Mm. And it is required regularly.
Yeah. So let's just define what cervical cancer is. Where in the body do you get this cancer? How does it spread? How do you get it?
So cervical cancer is actually is a cancer that affects the cervix. And the cervix is the bottommost part of the uterus, essentially. So, if one would describe this anatomically, from the inside, you have your ovaries. You can get ovarian cancer, which is a completely separate topic. Mm-hmm. A site where one can get endometrial cancer. And then the outlet where the baby comes out of, that is the cervix and the vaginal tract. So essentially, the mouth of the uterus is the cervix. Most common cause of cervical cancer is the human papilloma virus, or HPV. Mm-hmm. People are much more comfortable with the shortened version. And unfortunately, that is something that people acquire in different ways, but most commonly from multiple sexual partners. A lot of women, even though you may not have multiple sexual partners, if your husband perhaps has, he can transmit the virus to you, which can then eventually result in you developing cervical cancer. Mm. In terms of where it spreads to, it's very similar to other types of cancers, where it can spread via the bloodstream. So it can spread to the lungs, the liver, the bones. And it can also, as it grows and expands, it grows into surrounding structures. So the uterus, the vagina, cervical cancer, the more advanced it is, the more lymph nodes that you often feel in your groin area and also inside the abdomen.
I decided that I would look at the cervix because the information is available to sort of understand as you were speaking, or, and just looking at this picture. So this would be, this cancer would grow within the woman's body, basically within the vagina.
Exactly. That's where it starts. So you can't actually always, if you've got the cancer already, which is what the whole point of screening is, you want to diagnose it before it is actually it develops into a cancer. But yes, it develops on the inside before you can actually see it on the outside or feel it on the outside or those, that exactly what you said.
Yeah, basically a silent killer, if you could put it that way, which makes me feel very uncomfortable. And I suppose that's why it's important to have the conversation.
Yes, I
can't imagine, because normally people, I know there was an incident of this young girl, she was about 19 and she passed away. And, you know, people are like, oh, but she was young. And, you know, when young people pass away, it's a bit awkward because people believe that it's more your older people or adults. Is, again, with the conversations I'm having with doctors, there's always this thing about having a checkup. And so if to the stats essay saying that this is the second most common, cancers amongst women, and women die because of that, then it's better to have your screening. But I think maybe let's move to the misconceptions, because I was thinking, you said, you know, if you have multiple sex partners, that, you know, you can pick up this disease, and that then you can get cervical cancer. And if you don't, and I'm thinking that, as you said, the cancer could be somewhere else and it spreads to somewhere else. So it doesn't really have to develop really in a female's vagina. It could have started in some other part of the female's body.
Well, in terms of cervical cancer, then it would theoretically develop at the cervix, which is part of the reproductive part of the reproductive tract.
Yeah.
And yes, they might present with quite advanced cancer, which means cancer that has already, or perhaps cancer that has already the cancer. Because I mean, it's not just that advanced cancers can still be treated. We can still offer treatment even if the cancer has metastasized. It's about more about quality of life necessarily, and yes, to a certain degree it is a little bit about quantity of life, but those are all discussions that one can have at that point. But ultimately we would like to offer you both quality and quantity of life, so diagnosing it when the source of it becomes very, very important.
Radio 786, where you hear the difference on 100.4 FM. On the couch is in conversation with Dr. Fatima Hussein, and we're speaking about cervical cancer being the second most common cancer amongst women, and that there's an increase in this stats, which is by 50.5%. So, Dr. Fatima, we were speaking about where the cervix is, where you would find this the cervical cancer. But now, what are some of the symptoms that one would have to indicate, like, okay, something might not be okay with me?
But these are slightly odd symptoms. I think one must always be in touch with their body. And has happened with you, and now it starts to happen. Sometimes you can even get bleeding between your menstrual cycle, so what we call dysmenorrhea, or just abnormal bleeding at different times. And then more often in the postmenopausal woman, you no longer have your period or your menstrual cycle. But if you then start bleeding, then one should definitely start seeking help. Sometimes things like your normal menstrual cycle can just be heavier than usual, and it can last a little bit longer. So that should also, especially if you want, if you somebody who has a very regular menstrual cycle, if these sorts of things happen, then it's always good to have it checked out. Perhaps a watery or a bloody vaginal discharge. Sometimes, more often than not, the most common thing that brings the patient through is that the discharge starts to smell different, or starts to have an odor around it, that makes them uncomfortable. And if that's not what you normally have, then you should definitely have it checked out. And then signs of more or symptoms of more advanced disease is pain in the pelvis, especially after intercourse. Pain that if you never had pain.
Your body well, you know, and so sometimes something might be happening all the time, but it doesn't occur to them because it's been happening for so long until maybe, you know, they get this like severe pain or this discharge that you speak of. You wanted to add?
No, I agree with you. It's very often when we talk to patients and ask them about their menstrual cycle and things, and a lot of people don't necessarily always know. They have an idea that it's yeah, they you know that vague, yeah, it is regular, yeah, it should be around now. Very vague answers, but those are important things because in the vast majority of people, menstrual cycle is regular, and or you are generally in a cycle, and it's something that you can potentially keep track of.
I wonder how we find a balance because it sounds as though for when I, so for example, someone who is not a female who's not sexually active is having multiple partners and how that affects, you know, cervical cancer. But for someone who isn't, how would that person then get cervical cancer? Is there another way?
So the first you left a little bit of a door open there, and you may not be sexually active now, but the question is if you have ever been sexually active. So anyone who has at some point been sexually active, even though they may not be, which is a common scenario in the older population, but this is an assumption by no means an guarantee. The thoughts are that you could have contracted the virus at some point during your sexual encounters, and therefore you are still at risk of developing cervical cancer, and therefore should have it. I think if you're asking if a person or patient has never been sexually active ever, can they still contract cervical cancer? And the answer to that is it's rare, and it's often not the squamous cell carcinoma, which is the most common type or subtype of cervical cancer that occurs in that group of patients. Then mechanism or pathway of origin, and that they say actually could have been associated with medications that were given in the past in the 1950s to moms that were pregnant to avoid miscarriage, and the medication is diethylstilbestrol. A lot of patients won't even know that they've or moms won't even know that they've been given that medication. Doctors would have perhaps told them, "I'm going to give you something to help prevent you from losing the baby," but that sort of medication can put one at risk for adenocarcinoma, which then is a different type of cervical cancer.
Okay. I just, it's very scary for me to take this information in. And, let's move into some of the risk factors of a cervical cancer.
So smoking. That's the everyone always smoking is really bad for you. Yes, smoking is definitely bad, and when people with the HPV When people who smoke also have the human papillomavirus or HPV infection, the infection tends to last longer, cervical cancer, because then you're going to have a chronic, persistent stimulus for the development of it. The other thing is smoking itself is provokes cancer. It degenerates cells and the ultrastructure of the DNA, which increases the risk as well. So it's kind of a two-hit process in patients who are smokers, people who are smokers. Other risk factors are increased number of sexual partners. I think that's basic math. Basic. If you increase the number of sexual partners, you increase the number of chances of getting HPV. Earlier sexual activity. So the earlier you get it, the longer, most likely that you are going to have the HPV HPV virus.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, the longer you have the chronic form of HPV, the more you have the risk of it developing or causing a cancer in the long term. Also, people who tend to an early sexual debut is often associated with multiple sexual partners. Not necessarily. I mean, in the a lot of people, I suppose, do get them. So other infections that we all know about are HIV and syphilis. I think that we don't hear so much about diseases like herpes and chlamydia and gonorrhea.
Mm-hmm.
All of those just cause foul-smelling vaginal discharges, but they also increase your risk of developing HPV. In people who have weakened immune systems, your immune system can't protect you against the HPV virus. It has difficulty fighting the HPV virus away, and therefore you are more likely to develop a chronic form of it, in which case you are more likely to develop cervical cancer. Those are amongst the most common risk factors for developing it.
Scary. Very scary. And just to think that, like, it continues, it's like the gift that keeps on giving, you know. So if you're smoking and you might have the virus, or you don't have, like, it just keeps on increasing within your body and you don't even know, and you contributing to your own health deteriorating. It's really, yeah, stop smoking, people. So we've spoken about the risks, we've spoken about cervical cancer. What is it, you know, I think let's maybe take a breather. This is 100.4 FM on the Couch. We're speaking to Dr.